Tonight, we have a wonderful speaker. His name is David Herard. When you hear David, you will know he speaks from the heart. What he's going to tell you is what he experienced. He is not some polished, trained professional speaker. He can be abrupt. His experience, which happened in Vietnam, is that a person who comes from that kind of a background and that kind of a perspective, who can find anger and difficulties as anyone could in a battle situation, wound up dying in the Vietnam War. He was, by most counts, fatally wounded. The experience that he had changed him from somebody who was not greatly acquainted with deity to someone who actually felt personal one-to-one communication and contact with God. Thank you again for coming, and please give our speaker, David Herard, a round of applause. Welcome.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If I get a little shaky, please bear with me. I don't like to speak in front of people. All right? My idea of speaking in front of people is the select board in my town. And then I can get angry with them and I can walk away. Way back when, I went in the Marine Corps for one purpose only. I wanted to go to war. No ifs, no ands, no buts. It was an experience that I wanted to experience. My first tour of duty was from 1966 to 1967. I was first wounded in 66. Got too close to a couple of hand grenades. Lost three friends. I walked away. A month later, I got shot. All very interesting. Ended up rotating home in April 67. I reported into my parent unit, made my first sergeant really angry with me. Back then we had to come out in formation with starch utilities. Everything starched. Trousers, shirt, hat. I was a salty combat Marine. Of course, I also had an attitude. I was volunteered, or should I say voluntold, that I was going to California for escape invasion and resistance to interrogation school. 6 weeks up in the mountains, if you brought a knife with you, you were given a poncho, a map, a compass, and told, you're here, you go there, you want to eat, you better kill it on the way. If you got captured, you were interrogated. I was shoved naked into two 55-gallon drums, had cold water thrown on top of me. It was cold. Then they took me out of that, stuck me in a box about the size of a coffin, and stuck me in the ground. Didn't like it. After 6 weeks, I was sent back to my parent unit. First sergeant decided he was going to send me to Panama for jungle warfare school. And I'm going, nope, oh no, and oh hell no. Went up to the captain. I said, I want to sign my waiver to stay in the United States for a year. I want to go back. And he tried to talk me out of it. And I told him, I'm not a garrison Marine. Put me someplace where people don't like me and are shooting at me, I'm comfortable. My life is simple. It's black or it's white. There are no variations of gray. After about a month of talking to him, he said, fine. I got back in Vietnam for the last 3 weeks of Tet Offensive. My job is a radio operator. I'm that funky guy you see on the movies that has this radio on his back with the thing up here. That's my job. Officers, machine gunners, radio operators back then had 3 seconds to live after the first shots fired. When I got back during the way offensive, I was given a weapon, and I'm a grunt. I'm infantry. I'm not doing my job, not doing the job I was trained for. My job was to go hunt them down. I was almost pretty good at it. Back in those days, everything worked well. I had two legs that would carry me any place. I had two hands that worked, and the only time I felt pain is when I fell down. I could care less what's in front of me. You make me angry, I'm going to shoot you. After the Tet Offensive, I was taken to the rear with the rest of the unit. I was issued my radio. We got resupplied and we sent out to Quezon. I was among the relieving forces for that siege. I was told I was going to Hill 881 North, 10 miles from Quezon. The other Marines and I went up there, about 250, a little bit more than what we generally have. Choppers came in, landed, mortars, rockets started coming in also. And I had a bad attitude. I didn't care. Everybody else was running. I'm walking. It was a mentality of, they can kill me, but they can't eat me. Months later, we got word that Quezon was going to be abandoned. The hill we were on was going to be abandoned. We were supposed to be chopping out to Hill 681. Orders came down, destroy everything. We had trench lines, bunkers, large stocks of mortars, large stock of small arms, ammunition. We blew it up in place. When the NVA saw what we were doing, of course they're going to do what they're supposed to do. They're going to try to kill us. So we get mortars, we get rockets, we get small arms fire. The Army was supposed to pick us up, and I guess they couldn't make it. Ringo called in some troop helicopters. 3 lifts later, the company is off the hill. We were on 681. That evening, we got hit. Firefights there didn't happen in the daytime. It was at night. They owned the night. I personally carry 15 magazines. Each magazine has 20 rounds. I also carried a 45, 4 magazines for it. Always carried 6 hand grenades, 1 thermite grenade, and 2 bandoliers of extra ammo. Always. Plus my radio. We got in a firefight. It lasted from 2 in the morning. I can't really tell for sure. Lost my watch at Quezon. It lasted until the sun was coming up. I had 20 rounds left. Everybody was tired. To be quite frank with you, everybody was pissed off. We had enough casualties where it's going to take a minute to get them off the hill. Half an hour or so later, word was passed down. Everybody needs to be resupplied. We need more ammo. The other men around me are still sitting there. They're tired. I can understand. Tired. Long night. I have a short fuse. I got really angry. I decided, well, fine. You guys want to hump the ammo, I'll hump it. I once started humping ammo for the 81 mortars. Each box carries 3 mortars. 1 box in each hand. And I'm in no big hurry to go anyplace. I made quite a few trips. Somebody hollered incoming. And I go, okay. No big deal. Been there, done that. You missed so far. I don't expect you to get me this time either. I got halfway to the mortar pit. Then I found myself on both my knees. I made a 3-point landing, both knees and head. Was not unconscious. I'm awake. I sit up on my haunches, and I'm kind of taking stock of what's going on. I look down, I go, I don't have a right arm. It's gone. What it was tucked in behind me. I reached around, pulled it out. I had a hole from my wrist to my elbow, and I was bleeding. I was not impressed. Okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to go look for a corpsman. He's going to plug the hole, stitch it up, and we're good to go. I stood up, started walking back up the hill. One of the other men I knew looked at me and he goes, damn, Dave, look at your legs. Oh, now I'm flat on my back. I'm bleeding from every place. Coleman comes over, takes my flak jacket off, Didn't have to cut very much of my trousers off because I didn't have very much of those left. Started bandaging me up. Now, I'm not real cool about seeing my own blood. I'll look at yours all day long. No big deal. Right? Everyone's that way. I don't mind looking at your blood. My blood is different. That's coming out of me? Really? I lay there, closed my eyes. One of the men asked the corpsman why I wasn't getting a shot of morphine. The corpsman said, can't. It's just going to leak out. I lost one-third of my right calf. I lost one-third of my left thigh. I was split from ankle to knee. I had railroad tracks on my backside. A piece of shrapnel took the ring off that I had on my hand and nearly took this hand off. At that particular time, it was no big deal. A few stitches here, and I'm good to go. Now, it didn't happen that way. I didn't feel any pain, but I was tired. I was exhausted. I hadn't cleaned my body in 4.5 months. I smell nasty. As I'm laying there, I hear the corpsman talking to everybody else. You know, I'm really tired now. I want to go to sleep. I've had enough of this. I want to rest. I cannot attest for anybody else. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a soothsayer. I do not have a crystal ball. But I died. So you're going to ask yourself, how do you know you're dead? I don't know. Didn't feel any pain. I was standing. I was seeing people. And they looked awful happy to me. They were a lot happier than I was at that moment. And then I kind of get this feeling like, I know these people. I really know these people. I can't see your face, but I know you. I know those men because, you know, I'm pretty sure I watched you die. But that's only a feeling. What does a crazy old Frenchman do? Let's go take a look. I can't remember walking. All I know is from where I was going towards this river. And I get to the river and people are saying, come on over. And I'm going, yo, be right over. I'm looking for a way to get across and this hand comes over and he goes, nope, not your time. You have something I want you to do. Really? Well, this hand's on me. I kind of looking across the river and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know who you are, but what you want has absolutely nothing to do with what I want. And then I started to realize, you know, I have a lot of answers to a lot of questions I've always had in my life. Why am I having all these answers? Why do I know this stuff? I felt warm. I felt love. I felt compassion. And I was told, you're not staying, you're going. You're going back to do. I woke up, or came to, with a corpsman pounding on my chest, telling me not to die on him. Okay, sounds like a winner to me. I liked it at the other place. Stop pounding on my chest, I'm going to reach up and rip your throat out. They throw me on a chopper, and as the chopper's taken off, somebody decides to take another pot shot at me. Bullet went through the belly of the ship, went up through my leg. Took a piece of meat about big as my fist. Door gunner looks down and says, you want to smoke? I'm having a hard time to see. And you want me to have a smoke now? No. I'm going from nearly into the demilitarized zone down to Charlie Med. Lengthy chopper ride. I came to and passed out a couple of three times. Once I got to Charlie Med, I woke up. They were hauling my body off the x-ray table. I looked to the side and the x-ray table was full of blood. Okay, this isn't good. Of course, I wasn't saying it that way. Remember, back then I was young and I had a mouth like a drunken sailor. Passed out. Came to. There's a priest standing over me giving me the last rites. I looked up at him. I said, Father, I'll let you know when I'm ready to die. Until then, get away. I woke up in a hospital bed. My mouth felt like the desert, and somebody was walking through it with dirty socks. Opened one eye, and I see the corpsman go by, and I'm going, ugh. All right. He comes over. He says, what do you want, water? He comes over with this little lollipop thing with water on it. And I'm thinking to myself, really? You're going to stick that in my face? I want water. You don't understand. I'm parched. And Coleman looks down and he goes, this is all I can give you. I pass out. I wake up on a tarmac waiting for a ride on a helicopter to a hospital ship. I have a cast on my right arm. I have a half body cast on me and a waist down. I'm impressed. They chuck me on a chopper. I pass out. I wake up as the chopper lands on the hospital ship. The corpsmen come out, grab the stretcher arm on, and they're not too gentle. I'm hitting on the sides of the ship, and there are words coming out of my mouth. They aren't polite. They took me to the berthing in this hospital ward. I was the second man from the floor. There were two more people above me. I was on this wall, that wall, and that wall. My days were spent either on my back or on my stomach. One day, Coleman come up. He said, want to take the cast off because we have to fix you. Took the cast off. I didn't quite understand what they meant by fixing me. They hadn't sewed me up at all. They shoved gauze in the wounds. Now's the time to take it out. Coleman said, I can give you a shot of morphine now or after we take it out. Hey, I'm a brave Marine. Take that sucker out. They poured a little water on it and they ripped it out. I was impressed. I hollered and screamed a bit. He goes, let me help you out and gave me morphine. I went through that three times a day, every day, for a week. I went from 175 pounds, I barely made 100. They shipped my little body to Japan. That's when they started operating, putting things back together. One of the orthopedic surgeons came up to me one day, he says, well, might have to take your right arm, left leg. And I go, no. I was born with them, I'll die with them. They balance the body out. He said, well, they're going to be useless. They're going to hang there. You're going to be in a wheelchair. Don't bet on it. Took me into the operating room. Came back out. He told me, he said, yeah, we were able to save both. And you're really lucky. Another half an inch and you'd be wearing a colostomy bag. Hey, I'm from Maine. I don't know from colostomy bag. Explain this to me. He did, huh? Okay. After a few weeks, I was getting morphine every 4.5 hours. I was a hurting puppy. I was weak. I got to sit in a wheelchair. They wheeled me outside in the nice tropical sun and left me there. Now, I've been on my back for quite some time. Sitting up was not one of the great joys of my life. Some Navy guy found me with one leg on the ground and one, I'm doing this thing with a wheelchair. I went out of the sun, put me back in my bed. I guess the doctors thought that I was impressive, so they said, you're going home. Great. Where am I going? You're going to the Boston Naval Hospital. Wonderful. They put me in an aircraft with a bunch of other guys. Just as bad condition as I am, some even worse. Took us there. When the plane landed, it was the last time I got a shot of morphine. It was a matter of suck it up. I was in that naval hospital for a year. I had about 15 operations. When they told me they're going to make my hands work better, I could do this with both of them. Now I can do this with this one. But it's all right. You adapt, you improvise, and you overcome. I couldn't figure out what God wanted me to do. I had an attitude problem. I don't like crowds. I don't really dislike having my back to any door for any reason. And you give me a hard time, I'm going to let you know on what side of the road the bear's going to come out on. After a year and a half, separated, went home. I couldn't get a job because I was a Vietnam vet, because all Vietnam veterans are drug addicts. And we were all baby killers. And everybody that I went overseas with got spat on. So I wasn't real happy with the American population. It took me a couple of years to learn how to walk pretty good. Couldn't get a job until 78. I spent years wondering, okay, what do you want me to do, God? Give me a hint. Give me your 800 number so I can have a conversation with you. This is fact. This is not fiction. This is not brag. Intervening years, if something happened that I was having a hard time dealing with, was having a hard time wondering where I'm going to get the money for the next meal, something good always happened. Always. Without exception. When things didn't go the way I thought they should go, yep, God and I had a real heart-to-heart talk. Don't really think he was listening, kind of busy someplace else. In 2000, I joined a volunteer fire department. Seemed like a good thing to do. I was given no special consideration. It's a matter of you do the job, you go away. I did the job. 10 years ago, kind of fell into it because I'm nosy. I got my EMT license. Now, I live in a community of 5,500 people. I've seen it all. Childbirth, drug overdoses, grandma slipped down the stairs, broke her hip. I enjoy going to see little people and old people. Old people because I'm old. Little people is because they always have bright eyes. But I found something I truly enjoy doing. When I'm done the job, I turn around and walk away, and anything that I feel about what happens stays there. And God gave me the gift to walk away and live alone. I don't have to understand anything. All I have to do is accept it. I accept my limitations. Not happy. I don't like having most of my legs gone. The few times I did wear shorts around, people going, oh, jeez. Oh, put some clothes on. I don't like having to do everything with my left hand. I used to be right-handed. My hobby, when I have the time, I make granddaughters some cedar chess, the hope chess. Talk about adapting. The only thing I can't do is what I haven't tried yet. And I've tried a lot. I can't swim with a hoot and holler. I'm sorry, I'm a rock. I tried skydiving to see if it cured my fear of heights. No. Didn't help out. Tried scuba diving. I found out that if I go a foot and a half below water, I rupture both my eardrums and... No. Okay? But I can drive a fire truck like nobody else. I can drive the rescue truck. Get out of my way, I'm going to run your little body over. Okay? I have grandma who's fallen down and has broken something and she doesn't feel good, and you will get out of my way. That's what I do. I don't get paid for any of this. It costs me. I burn a tank of gas every week, but I don't mind. It's not as if God said, hey, this is what you're going to do. Is kind of like, hey, look at that. Maybe you can do something. And that's what I do. I do my best. I'm not perfect. I make a lot of mistakes. But I know that what I'm doing now is good. And sometimes when I'm done, I go home and I give myself a little kudo. Yep, did a good job today. But that's me. I'm not going to tell you that I'm a saint because The select board and the town manager knows exactly where I stand on every subject. And I have to see them once a month. And they cringe. I am polite because I choose to be. Or I can be the complete opposite. I'm perfectly capable either way. I do not go to church on a regular basis. Why? I don't know. But everything I do in my life, I do with, well, what will you want me to do? Is this really what I should be doing? Should I be looking in a different direction? I am not the best guy in the world. I have one last vice. Maybe a couple more. My major vice is I can't stop smoking. Okay? I know it's going to kill me. I intend to raise hell on the way out. My idea of drinking is I have this much brandy in a glass once a month. I don't do half the stuff my counterparts do. And I'm happy with that. I'll march to the tune of my drummer. Everybody else is going to have to find their own tune. If you can't find your own tune, then you're doomed. If you think about it long enough and hard enough, you're going to find out what your tune is. Like I said, God's treated me well. The times of want I was given, the times of need I suffered and I was given, when I really, really wanted something, I didn't get it. Can't have everything. I really, really wanted a brand new pickup truck. Well, that's not going to happen. I don't think God's going to come down with his magic wand and go, bing! That piece of junk you're driving is brand new. All right, God, I know I have to work for it myself. And I talk to him a lot. Like standing here right now, this is the most I stand at any one time. I have a piece of steel in my back that presses on a nerve and makes my eyes want to cross. No big deal. I'll get over it. The reason I'll get over it is because I'm in pain when I wake up, and I'm in pain when I go to bed. It has been this way since 1968. I have learned to live in pain. Sometimes the pain is unbearable. I would just like to stick my head in a hole and just let the world die. And then I have days where, you know, it's not too bad. I know it's 20 below, and I know my knees are killing me, and my hand hurts, and my elbows, oh God, give me a break. And I can just imagine with this big finger coming down out of the cloud going, what body part you want broken? I think God and I are on good terms. I had a wonderful dream one night. I was out on my back porch, singing in my rocker. I look up at the sky and I see this huge silhouette of God with all these little lights moving to make the full figure. The last little light on the very small toe of God was me. At least I'd like to think so. That was the feeling that I had. That last little light was me. Not because I did anything special, because I'm not. Maybe because I tried. And I don't like not trying. I really dislike giving up on anything. If I gave up, then I'd be minus an arm and a leg and a few other things. I lost a very, very good friend this last Christmas. The turkey neck is an Indian. And he wanted me to tend his burial fire. It's 4 days. But first, the tribe had to okay it. I had to be a temporary member of the Black Wolf Society. In this tribe, the Black Wolf Society is a society of life takers. If you're not a life taker, you cannot tend this fire. They gave me the honor. I tended his fire. His wife called me up 10 minutes after he died. I drove to his house, sat by his bed, and he and I had a talk. I bid him a good journey. Told him that he'd see the people that he loved the most. When I was asked to come here, it was, now, go all the way out west. Marvin said, go ahead, think about it. Yeah, it took about 3 or 4 days. All right, I might like it. After all, I did live out here for 11 years. You know why I left? Too many people. My driveway's 1,000 feet long. I have a tree line all the way around me. And if I get really angry, I'll take my shotgun out back of the house, stand on the porch, and blow up a few cans. I like the woods. I like the quiet. I like to sit on my porch, turn the porch light off, and look up at the stars and wonder. I don't have any answers for that one either. I have no answers why I lived this long. I love kids. So long as they're not my kids. Okay? All right? My kids are totally different, but I like kids. Until they're about 9, when they develop an attitude. The second they're born, and they're 9 years old, love them to death. People from 60, way out here, okay. I will do whatever you want, whenever you want me to do it. The rest of you in between? You okay? Y'all got attitudes. But that's my life. If I didn't like it, I wouldn't do it. I could stay home and vegetate. I choose to do this. It's interesting. It gets me out of the house. Keeps me from going stir crazy. Because if you had to taste my cooking, you'd leave the house too. I cook spaghetti very well. The other meal I cook very well is beans and hot dogs. I'm getting to the point where I don't burn water. I like to joke. I look around, I see people who look like they've been constipated for the past 25 years. Think about it. You walk down the street and they're all... Whoa, go to the bathroom. So I have an overdeveloped sense of humor. I don't care who you are or what religion you are. I'll pick on you. I don't care who you are. If you can't smile and smile at yourself, you got a problem. I can't have a problem because I laugh at myself every morning when I look in the mirror. I used to have a face that didn't have lines in it. At one time, I didn't have bags. Now I have suitcases. A big night out for me is that I come home at 9:30 and I'm in bed by 1:15. That's a big night. I take pills to go to sleep because I have nightmares. Every night. I take pills twice a day for the pain. I told my doctor, I said, you know, I'm 67. I don't need to bite the bullet anymore. I need to control my pain because my pain was starting to control me. I take a pill in the morning. I take a pill at night before I go to sleep. And in between, I'm crazier than a bed bug. And I like being crazy. That means I can do almost anything and everybody goes, hey, that's Dave, no big deal. I'll go down to the local grocery store and I'll dance my way in. Why not? Come on. Life is short. Enjoy it. Make your family happy. Stop giving your parents a hard time. I keep telling that to mine. You know, the First National Bank is closed. At the bank. One day we're all going to be gone. And I don't want anyone standing over me at any gravesite lying. Every funeral I've ever gone to, oh, such a wonderful person. Well, sure as the driven rain. No. No, I'm not. Say the truth. I don't care. I'm dead. The one thing I am really afraid of, I mean, right down to the shoes afraid of, is dying. I don't want to. I'm going to miss out. Holding my kids, playing with my grandchildren. I'm told by soothsayers that you'll come back and haunt them. I don't want to haunt them. I'm going to love them up now. I don't get one chance. I don't know the man who said it. He's far more intelligent than I. He said, if there's any good that I can do or any kindness that I can show, let me show it now, for I'll not travel this way again. It doesn't cost a penny to be kind. I think I've talked entirely too long. Thank you.
I'll start it off, David. When you had your experience, tell us who it was that told you you had to go back and why you know it was...
It was God, okay? It was God. No if, no ands, no buts. I know it. It took me a long time to accept it. I didn't admit this to anybody but my wife. It was God. I knew He loved me. I knew He was going to take care of me. That's how it is with me.
I was just wondering, did He give you any other instruction? Did He talk to you longer than that? Did you talk to anyone else while you were there?
Nope. It was, you're not supposed to stay here. There are things for you to do.
So then, have you decided what you were supposed to do?
I'm doing it.
And that's what you're doing, right?
Yep. I am an EMT. I'm a fireman.
To help people.
I have really enjoyed listening to you. I think you're really refreshing. I appreciate you coming here and sharing your experience. I was wondering, you said that when you had died, you had a lot of questions, and then all of a sudden you had answers. I was wondering about that. Can you share anything of that?
You ever have, in your mind, you're sitting there in the morning, drinking a cup of coffee or whatever. I wonder, are there people on other planets? Why do we have to suffer so much? Why do we have such short lifespans? I wondered, why is it that we have to be so nasty to one another? And all I can tell you, quite honestly, is I knew. I knew it all. You think of the question, I had the answer. I haven't a clue right now.
My question is, based upon your experience, is not God's love unconditional?
Yeah, it is. But if you're going to be a turkey while you're here, do you deserve it?
If you're going to be a turkey here, you'll be a turkey there.
If you're going to be one of these individuals who will lie to get money, who will rob somebody, who will shoot somebody, you really think He's going to be really, really kind to you? He might put you someplace for a few million years and let you steam over it, but I don't think He's going to throw you away.
When you got up and you started, after you'd been wounded and you died, and you were walking, you mentioned that you felt love.
Yes.
Now, can you describe that, or what difference has that feeling or that experience made in your life? Was it different from what we feel as far as the love that we have here?
I believe so. What it did to my life, I ignored for a long time. I'm a taker of life. At one point, I enjoyed taking life. I wasn't happy with myself either. I had to accept myself for what I was, for my shortcomings. I have a hair trigger temper, and now when I get angry, it's a failing. I have failed. But love here, between you, your wife, whomever, is pale in comparison.
With you having said all of that, I just want to say thank you for your service.
Thank you.
When you said that the hand stopped you from crossing the river and you really wanted to go across the river, correct?
Yes, I did.
In your opinion now, after looking back on it over the years, do you think that that was God's way of saying your test isn't finished yet?
Well, if he's testing me, I think I might have failed.
I guess that's what I mean. Do you feel like you have more to do, you have more to show?
The most honest answer I can give you, I cannot imagine not having my kids. I have a son and two girls. They're in their 30s. They're a pain. My girls call me, since I've been here, 2 or 3 times a day. Okay? Dad, are you okay? Things going good? Did you get enough coffee? Okay, I love my coffee. I like 15 cups of coffee a day. Okay? So I have to stay wired. There's my girls. My grandchildren? Oh, I need a snack. Imagine missing that. Okay? My 15-year-old granddaughter comes home, because I take care of her 3 days a week from school. She walks in the house, puts a hand on her hip, cocks over to the other side and goes, I need a snack. Okay. I wouldn't miss that for all the tea in China. I think God did me a favor. My grandkids are something else. My two granddaughters were up visiting. They said, Pepe, it's French, we need to go shopping. We do? Okay, let's go. Went up to the local Target, and one of them looks at me. She goes, Pepe, I need a training bra. Okay, hon. I didn't take care of that business with your mom. Okay? And then I couldn't help myself. I had to ask her what she was training. Miss out on that? No way.
I have a question about, you said you had, you've gone through lots of pain, physical pain. I wondered what advice you give to anyone else who has to go through a lot of physical pain in their life.
It's a mindset. In the Marine Corps, there are two kinds of Marines. There's a new breed and there's the old Corps. I'm the old Corps. If you're in pain, it's mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter. Okay? That's what the Marine Corps taught me. You're in pain. So isn't half the world. Shake it off. Walk it off. Okay? At times I was wondering if I was ever going to walk. Okay, yeah. We'll go walk it off. I get ugly because I'm in pain. Mornings, all I want to do is just open up the back door and wing something. That's me.
As you were walking by the river, you said you felt warmth and love. And did you say you knew everything?
Everything.
So was Can you expand a little more on, were you having a telepathic experience with the people on the other side?
Nope. I wasn't talking to anybody on the other side of that river. Whomever was standing behind me, and I sincerely believe it was God, gave me the answers to everything I ever wanted to know. I don't care what it is. Dredge it up in your mind, there you're going to have the answer.
And were you able to bring those answers back with you, or did they slip away?
Oh, if I knew those answers, I'd have a better pickup truck than I have right now.
We're very grateful for your service and your story. You said when you were a radio operator?
Correct.
You hear the shot and then you have 3 minutes. I wasn't sure what that was. And then you said you had a friend that died and you were able to talk with him for 10 minutes after?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
In combat, a little bit different from Iraq, when you're in the jungle, if you can see the guy in front of you, you're doing good. When your patrol is ambushed, after the first shot, you have 3 minutes to live if you're an officer, machine gunner, or a radio operator. Those are the statistics that came down. I've been in a lot of firefights. I've walked down a lot of trails. And everything went, pew, pew, pew. But I'm going, oh. My friend that died, we grew up together. His wife, Cindy, I was there all day. We're waiting for him to die. She said, go home, I'll call you. I went home at 10 o'clock in the evening. She called me up at 10 minutes of 2. 10 minutes past 2, I was at her house. That's where he wanted to die. I kicked her and her daughter out of the room. I pulled up a chair. Pat and I had a good conversation. I'm assuming his spirit was still there. He's an Indian and he believes in that. And I respect it. And I told him, get back, bub. You can look down on everybody. If you need to, I imagine you can come down and make a difference. If you want them to make the mistake, let them make it.
I'm going to ask one last quick question. By the way, David has mentioned to me that in a lot of the units that he was in and around in Vietnam, they lost up to half the men in their unit, so it was pretty rough. One of the things you didn't mention today that I think people would really enjoy hearing was about the transition from when you died till when you were at the edge of the river when you saw the light and how it grew. Could you describe that, please?
I'm standing there. Everything's white. People on the other side are white. White robes, shirts, trousers, shoes. And like I said, I can't recognize anybody. I want to go to the river because, like, I had to. And the river had color in it, but to me, everything seemed kind of, you know, white. As the closer I got to the river, the whiter things got. He was going to test me, I assume. I wanted to go. And something I've never told anyone, God and I had an argument. He said, you're not going? And I said, yes, I am. He said, you have things to do? And I'm going, no, I don't want to go. There is pain there. I have no pain here. I want to be here. He said, no. And he, I guess he won. There's brightness in the world. There's darkness in the world. Which one do you want to be? You want to be walking in the light? Or you want to walk in the shadows? Or you really want to walk on the dark side? Your choice. You get to do whatever you want. And you get to pay the price for it.